Support for St. Louis Public Radio comes from Maryville University, proudly sponsoring St. Louis Public Radio's groundbreaking multimedia podcast project, We Live Here. Maryville, there's only one you.
Hi guys, we're out doing some reporting for our second season, which is coming up in March. So in the meantime, we wanted to bring you some of our favorite shows from season one.
Now, in this episode, you're going to hear our good friend and colleague Jason Rosenbaum talk about something called SB5. It's a state law that puts limits on how much money a municipality can take in from traffic fines. At the time we ran the show, the bill was just working its way through the legislature, and since then, it has now become law in Missouri.
Okay, so we've got to get back to reporting, so enjoy the show.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems and the people they touch.
I'm Emmanuel Berry.
And I'm Tim Malloy.
And from St. Louis Public Radio,
this is We Live Here. In this episode, paying interest on a debt to society.
Tim, what do you say we kick off the show with a little bit of role playing today?
That is random.
No, it's not.
To say the least.
Just come, just work with me. Work with me here.
Okay, well, we've done the show long enough now. I trust you. Sure.
Okay.
Let's do some role playing.
All right. Okay. So you've just been arrested.
Why am I arrested in this role play?
For trespassing.
And not only have I just been arrested, I've been arrested for something kind of boring.
I mean, what crime did you want to be arrested for, Tim?
I don't know. I mean, if I'm going to be picked up for something this role play, I would like to be picked up for high stakes jewel heist.
Well, first of all, that's a generic crime dream. Second of all, you're arrested for trespassing in this case. Sorry.
All right, fine. Trespassing, no big deal. I'm just going to go ahead and play along here. Your Honorable Emmanuel Berry, I plead guilty. I'm just going to go ahead and assume in this exercise I've got the cash to pay the fine, and we can move on from this alleged, albeit totally boring, transgression.
I can understand, I guess, why you might think that we can just move on. I guess we do have a show to do, but we've got to play this out a little bit more.
You're making it sound like there's a catch.
Well, because there could be. Because even pleading guilty to a misdemeanor, a boring crime like trespassing, as you've said, it can come with other penalties that you would end up dealing with well after you pled guilty or served time in jail or whatever.
Okay. Now I think I know where you're going.
You see where I'm going with this?
I do.
Yeah. Collateral consequences, the topic of our episode.
Very, very clever. And I don't know if you guys can tell or not, but we've been up to our necks doing shows on the criminal justice system at this point.
Yeah, that is so true. And we should make sure everyone knows what exactly we're talking about when we say collateral consequences.
Right. So what do you say we just start by introducing the law professor in Illinois we talked to?
Sure. Everyone meet Lucien Dervan.
An associate professor of law and director of faculty development at the SIU School of Law.
Just a quick formality, SIU is short for Southern Illinois University.
Dervan says there are some collateral consequences that people already know about.
For instance, if you're convicted of a felony, you may no longer be able to possess a gun.
And Dervan says there are some collateral consequences that many people would say are common sense.
If you have an individual who has previously abused children or abused the elderly, I don't think that many people would argue that it's unreasonable for us to say that individual should never work in a daycare center or should never work caring for the elderly.
That's an example of a law that is specifically tailored to a category of crimes.
But Dervan says the problem is that many collateral consequences treat all crimes, whether it's driving without a license to drug trafficking, the same.
It can affect every facet of your life. It can affect social services, employment, licenses that you might have for your employment, your housing opportunities, student loans, parental rights, immigration status, volunteer opportunities. The list really goes on and on.
Between the state and federal level, the American Bar Association tallied up more than 46,000 laws across the nation that can be classified as collateral consequences.
Missouri has about 900.
Many of those consequences deal with drug offenses. For instance, if you're found guilty of making or distributing a controlled substance, no matter how many treatment or restorative justice programs you go through, you are no longer eligible for protection against unlawful housing practices or discrimination in commercial real estate loans.
And then there are 347 laws in Missouri that the ABA refers to as discretionary.
In other words, maybe something will happen, or maybe it won't. 201 of those apply to professional licenses.
Just as an example, you could lose your barber's license for being found guilty or pleading guilty to, quote, any offense involving moral turpitude, whether or not a sentence is imposed. So what is moral turpitude, you ask?
Basically, doing things considered contrary to community standards of justice, honesty, or good morals.
In other words, it's pretty open to interpretation.
To put it mildly.
Many of these laws and regulations are administered by state organizations that do have some discretion. And again, that just adds to the complexity.
So complex, in fact, that Durvan says even the most experienced of attorneys can have a hard time advising their client.
He says someone could plead guilty to a misdemeanor that doesn't carry jail time and end up with a legal shadow that follows them around for the rest of their life.
So to demonstrate how this plays out in people's lives, we're going to take you to a spot under an Interstate 44 overpass near the Mississippi River. Nearby, crews are hustling to complete a big civic project, a $380 million project that will connect the Gateway Arch and the rest of downtown St. Louis.
The skies are just beginning to clear after a big Midwestern thunderstorm. On rainy nights, this overpass used to be home for Melvin Bain.
Right now, when it starts raining, we'll come up under the viaducts, and a lot of us slept here. As a matter of fact, I slept right there, used to sleep right there.
Oh, yeah.
And people in this, what's the name of this, the Hampton Inn, they used to come out and bring me food and stuff.
A few years ago, Bain's life began to unravel. The Navy veteran lost his job, got behind on child support, then got locked up for being behind on child support.
While in jail, he stopped paying his home insurance and his house burned down. When he got out of jail, he was homeless with a criminal record.
This takes us to a rainy night in July of 2013. Bain has a couple of bucks in his pocket and sees the casino lights just down the road.
And I saw the lights of the Lumineer. I'm going to go try my luck with this $2. And so I went to the Lumineer. I won some money, about $87. And, but they didn't like me being in there because I was homeless. And they could tell you're homeless because usually the homeless walk around with a backpack with all, you know, with all their belongings in it.
Long story short, the police come and tell him he has to leave and say he can't come back without an ID.
He comes back a few months later with an ID and gets arrested for trespassing, a misdemeanor.
These days, Bain is crashing with a friend in Soulard. He says he'd like to get a job, get back on track.
But Bain says he has health problems, and he has a criminal record that will show up any time a prospective employer searches his name. So he just doesn't bother applying for many jobs.
The GM plant, working out at the airport. You know, any place that I know for sure that they're going to do a background check, I don't even bother to apply for it because I know I'm not going to get the job.
All the twists and turns of Bain's story and many, many more are tucked inside of manila folders in Stephanie Loomis's office.
There's trash in here. Sorry about that.
That's cool.
Do I have, like, these? Like, these are my, some of them. I've got them there. I've got these here.
So what are all of these?
These are all my client files.
How many are in here, do you think?
Well, I had about 182 matters. I've closed some since then. So I'm at probably 126.
What's a matter?
Oh, so a matter is a legal issue for a client. I'm sorry.
Loomis is an attorney with Arch City Defenders.
It's a nonprofit that offers free legal services to poor people.
They also connect their clients with social services like mental health, drug treatment, and job training.
Loomis works mostly with folks like Bain, who are homeless and facing a tangled web of other issues, from housing to run-ins with the law.
She's busy, really busy. There are stacks of case files in every corner of her office.
This gentleman is a homeless vet who had a municipal warrant for his arrest for many years. We got that cleared in order for him to get into housing.
What was the warrant for?
Municipal warrant for an old ordinance violation, like general peace disturbance, I think. This lady had pled without a lawyer to a crime that, an ordinance level crime that affected her ability to stay in her employment and health care. So we went in and explained the situation to the judge and got that.
She says even small time violations like the one she's listing can make breaking the cycle of poverty that much harder.
Places that work with housing and employment for folks, you have to get a background check to participate in their program. You have to get a background check in order for them to refer you out to employers. So something as simple as a trespass or something as simple as, you know, a general peace disturbance, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But in the aggregate, when you're looking at it for a group of folks where $50 ticket's a lot of money, that might be the difference between you eating 1 month or not. It's huge. It can literally keep you in a cycle of poverty, and it makes our city, you know, have a few more issues, I think, than if we were looking more in depth at these problems.
Yeah. This is what, like a four drawer file cabinet?
Yes.
And it's a big one. But I imagine that there's, you could fill this over and over again.
And that's the tragic part is I meet hundreds and hundreds of people who need lawyers and don't have access to them. And we're only one group, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I see when I go out to municipal courts night after night, I see hundreds and hundreds of people who could benefit from a lawyer who are probably and most likely in the same situation as my clients, but there's no one to help them.
And as you may recall, we told you last episode that there are no public defenders in municipal courts.
Once you're stuck without help. You get, you know, four or five traffic tickets, and good luck paying them. If you can't afford it, you still got to drive. You still got to get your kids to school. You still got to get to work. You still got to get groceries, all that stuff still has to happen. And I think anybody, if you put getting your kid to school or getting, you know, to work so you can provide for your kid, you put that above a traffic ticket any day, and then you end up getting, you know, kind of ensnared in the system that never goes away.
For example, failure to pay a traffic ticket or missing a court date can result in a warrant for arrest.
That's what happened to Latricia Solomon, another one of Loomis's clients. Warrants for municipal traffic tickets took her situation from bad to worse.
She became homeless after leaving her husband, who she says was abusive and on drugs. At the time, Solomon had an 8-year-old and was pregnant with twins.
She had hardly any money, no home, and was driving around with expired plates.
That was the only car that I had to survive and get around in because I kept driving and I kept continuing to get tickets on it for unregistered plates. So, yeah, that's how that transpired, and I didn't have the money to pay for it or anything like that. So because I didn't have the money to pay for it, I guess it just kept adding up and adding up and adding up. And eventually the dang on car broke down completely to where I could not make it to court. So me not having to make it to court, then I guess they issued a no-show or something like that, and it just transpired into an even bigger problem for me.
So that's when the warrant thing started to come in. Like, was it, what kind of warrant? Was it just like not appearing?
Exactly.
Failure to appear, yeah. And you had four of them?
Yes.
Solomon says she had health problems when she was pregnant. Doctors put her in bed rest and she couldn't work.
She gave birth to her twins while living in an emergency shelter, and at that point owed about $1,000 in traffic violations.
The babies had health problems, and Solomon says she couldn't get into a more permanent housing program because of the warrants on her record.
She used to have catering jobs, but says she just couldn't get back to work.
So I was very good in the hospitality field, and that's where my passion was. So I wanted to continue that so I could help myself get back on my feet. But I kept getting rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection for almost 2 years. I could not get a job. I couldn't get a place to stay.
Would people tell you that it's because they look back at your criminal record?
My criminal record, yes.
Loomis, the Arch City Defender's attorney, helped her clean up all the warrants.
That made it easier to get out of the emergency shelter and into a transitional housing program. Now, traffic tickets and warrants for municipal courts are hardly the sole source of her problems.
But standing at the stoop of her former home in South St. Louis, Solomon says they've made it that much harder to get back on her feet.
Definitely a big weight on my shoulder, because it's like no matter how much you do to try to make everything right, at the blinking of an eye, you can lose it all.
Post post-Ferguson, there's been a lot of attention paid to stories like Solomon's.
Poor people who find themselves buried under warrant after warrant issued by one of St. Louis County's municipal courts.
Which, more often than not, stem from traffic tickets.
And it begs to question just how many warrants are floating around out there.
We took a look at data compiled in the latest annual report from the state court system.
Fair warning here, we're going to roll through a bunch of numbers.
Which admittedly doesn't always make for the most compelling part of a radio story, so to speak.
But hang with us. These numbers are pretty important and jaw-dropping.
All right. Everybody ready? Here we go. The municipal court for all of St. Louis County had a little more than 59,000 outstanding warrants at the close of fiscal year 2014.
But the rest of St. Louis County's 80 municipal courts had more than 390,000. The top three were Pagedale, population 3,300, and more than 22,000 outstanding warrants.
Next, there's Country Club Hills, population 1,260. More than 34,700 outstanding warrants.
And at the top of the list, Ferguson, population 21,000, and more than 45,100 outstanding warrants.
Now, we're not saying that each of Ferguson's 21,000 residents have two or more outstanding warrants. We're just pointing out that the number of outstanding warrants from the city's municipal court is more than double the city's population.
For more than a decade, Better Finley Life, a nonprofit social service provider, has partnered with municipalities to offer warrant forgiveness.
In exchange for $100, a participant can get a warrant lifted and a new court date set, but they'd still be on the hook to pay fines.
James Clark is the vice president of community outreach for Better Finley Life. He tells us about what's commonly referred to as the round robin.
Oh man, this is the 800-pound gorilla. This is the biggest fear of anybody riding around in St. Louis County or in St. Louis metropolitan area with warrants in more than one municipality. Let's say you have warrants in four municipalities. Mm-hmm. It's quite common. Mm-hmm. When you're pulled over, you will go to the first municipality, have to post a $300 bond. Mm-hmm. You will leave there, go to the next municipality, $300 bond. Go to the third $300 bond. Go to the fourth $300 bond. Now, where do I find $1,200? I call whoever I think may have $50 to $75 that they can chip in. Now, this whole round robin process could take 7 days. If I'm employed, I'm not employed anymore.
Better Together, a different nonprofit, not to be confused with Better Family Life, compiled data and found that despite having only 11% of the state's total population, the 90 municipalities in St. Louis County generated more than $45 million in fines and fees in 2013.
In other words, roughly one out of every $3 in traffic fines for all of Missouri went to those 90 municipalities.
A bill sitting on Missouri Governor Jay Nixon's desk would limit the revenue a municipality can generate from traffic fines.
And because that bill is so tied to what we're talking about on the show, we wanted to bring in St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum to tell us more about the bill.
And the politics.
Hey, Jason, thanks for stopping by.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. So, Jason, you've been covering this piece of legislation. Tell us what it does.
I think it does three important things. The first thing it does, it lowers the percentage of traffic fine revenue that a city can keep. So, for example, in St. Louis County, it would go from 30% to 12.5%. It also establishes minimum standards for St. Louis County cities. And an important aspect of that is that each of the cities would have to have an accredited police department within 6 years. And then it also has a bunch of civil rights aspects to the bill, including getting rid of a failure to appear charge and also limiting the amount of fines that can be levied against somebody.
Yeah, and I just want to point out, too, that Latricia Solomon, who we met earlier in the show, had a bunch of problems stemming from warrants for failures to appear.
So it seems like this could do some good for some people, but there are other people who are saying maybe not.
I think that there are two main counterarguments against the bill. The first is that if the bill has its intended effect and some of these cities don't have enough money to exist anymore, the majority of cities that are going to disappear are majority Black, African-American-led cities. And there's an entire representation issue because St. Louis County government is not nearly as diverse as some of these city councils. I think the other counterargument is that it's going pretty much against the poorer municipalities, and some of the richer municipalities that may write just as many tickets as some of the poorer ones are not going to be impacted as much.
Well, let's play this out, though. Let's say that Governor Nixon signs this into law. What's the potential impact?
I think that there are two potential routes for some of these small North County cities. The first is that they could all decide to voluntarily merge with each other, and maybe they have the economies of scale to exist as bigger cities. But I think the far more likely option is that some of these cities are going to fight it out to the bitter end. They're going to basically lose, and what will happen is they'll disincorporate and become part of St. Louis County.
So what are the chances that this gets signed?
I think the chances are pretty high because, from what I've heard, the governor's office was heavily involved in crafting the aspects of the bill, and I'd be very surprised if he'd veto a bill that he helped craft.
Well, thanks, Jason.
Yeah, thanks.
This is the third show we've done on the criminal justice system. And let's just be honest about this. We didn't really paint a pretty picture. But it's not a pretty picture. Just ask Stephen Hanlon. He's a professor at St. Louis University's Law School.
But the need for the system, just like Home Depot wants everybody to come in every Saturday, well, this system wants you back. They don't want to let you go. They want you subject to probation and parole and control and coming back in here and paying the fees and paying the fines and paying this and paying that so that we can sustain this system. That's got to change.
In case you couldn't tell, Hanlon's been a litigator for a long time.
So the man has a knack, shall we say, for making a passionate argument. But he strikes kind of a contemplative, almost quiet tone when he starts to talk about how maybe, just maybe, we're actually in the moment right now, post-Ferguson, where things could change.
We've kind of opened up the can of worms, and everybody's looking at it, and it's not pretty. There are huge economic forces at stake here who want to maintain the current system. But I think we have a moment. How long it will last, I don't know. But we have to do everything we can, every ounce of energy we've got, every resource we've got, every remedy we've got, we have to utilize.
And people are working to change the system and curb some of the long-term negative effects of collateral consequences, which, again, is shorthand for all the stuff that can come after paying a fine or spending time in jail.
For instance, there is a push, especially in the public sector, for something called ban the box. Basically, that means removing the part on an employment application that asks if you've been convicted of a crime.
And locally, late last year, the city of St. Louis stopped asking job seekers if they've been convicted of a felony.
Lucien Dervan, the law professor we talked to at the start of the show, says it's not a perfect fix, but it can be a good workaround.
The hope with this movement is that at least the individual gets an interview if they're qualified and has the opportunity to, if necessary, explain the conduct and actually interact on a personal level with the person who's doing the hiring.
Ban the box is just one example. There are other ideas out there. Some federal agencies have started taking a look at their policies, too.
The Small Business Administration, for instance, has proposed changing its rules for a microloan so people on probation and parole aren't left out. And the MacArthur Foundation just gave $150,000 to a local coalition that includes law enforcement and researchers at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. The goal is to better understand who is coming into the municipal court system in St. Louis and why they're ending up in jail.
On this episode, we focused on collateral consequences for lesser crimes, but we aren't done yet.
What about consequences both on and off the books for more serious crimes? Things that can land people in prison for 10, 15, or 20 years? What kind of a shadow follows a felon around?
How do you find housing?
Get a job.
Make sense of the world?
Or maybe connect with your kids again.
On the next episode, coming home after spending years behind bars. We Live Here is produced by me, Emmanuel Berry.
And me, Tim Lloyd, Shula Newman, whom we've got, I don't know, would you say a file cabinet full of things we
I could
say?
I think a file cabinet
a
full of
A big file cabinet full of stuff we could say about her. But she's our editor, and Margie Freibogel is the editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
Our theme music was composed by Casey Morgan.
From St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.